Tonight, hopefully, we've got another treat for you. I think I've I'm really surprised to find how easy it has been to fill three shows, really, one way or the other, round and about the internet with chats with Rob Freeman. It's been such a huge pleasure having him as a guest for the last sort of, three out of the last 4 weeks. It's kind of worked out one way or the other, and I'm sure that we'll be talking further on many other subjects, because of course there's many other things to talk about. But it was a real pleasure to have him back on a show in another place at another time, which we've recorded as it was being streamed. It went out on No Borders Radio last Friday. So there's a bit of stuff in it about the chat box. The chat box was quite active over at No Borders that night, and they had some quite interesting stuff to put in. So that's in this recorded interview as well. But of course, as I said earlier, Rob Freeman from criticalmassradio.co.uk is currently in the chat box. I know that he enjoys paying attention to that, and so he can hopefully answer any questions, and I'll maybe interrupt and voice anything that pops up. But in the meantime, here's Dr. Rock chatting with Rob Freeman, further to the subjects already discovered, but examining some very new and, as usual, fascinating, I think, new ground. So here we go, Dr. Rock and Rob Freeman, and I'll be back with you with some tunes after that. Thanks for being out there, folks. Well, tonight I'm very pleased and happy to have back Rob Freeman from criticalmassradio.co.uk. Are you out there, Rob?
Yeah, hi. Evening, Doc. You okay?
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Thanks very much for joining us again, Rob. It's really, really grand to have another chance to chat.
Yeah, it's great for me. It's become a trilogy, isn't it? It's the third one, isn't it? So I hope people aren't fed up listening to me.
They haven't shown any sign of it so far, and it seems to me that, as I was saying in one of the other chats we had, that the sort of techniques that are being practiced are kind of simple and applicable. And hopefully by the end of tonight's show, we'll be talking about your people's mandate. And the chance that we're actually making major moves into the goal area, as it were. How's it been going for you this week? You've been learning anything new?
Do you know, Doc, it's every day something. Somebody sends me something, or I come across something, and it's remembering to get it all back out before I put things into files and then forget where I put it. So if I don't get it out within a week or two, I forget how much is coming in, sort of thing. So, yeah, all good stuff. I've done it all. Every day something new is coming.
Brilliant. Well, that's the way we like it, eh? Better lively and changing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I thought that tonight it'd be a good idea. I'd like to... There was a couple of things that came up in chat boxes whilst we've been talking over the last 2 or 3 weeks that I thought it might be worth having a look at. But when you were talking about your kind of enforced appearance at court, I think there were some people in the chat box who felt that it was probably better not to talk. I think they were making comments to the effect that only the dead speak. And, I think the implication is that engaging in necromancy is generally speaking ill-advised. But could you remind us of why you chose to go to court, and perhaps whether it's advisable to step up and, volunteer for a stint at the wicket, like?
Yeah, great question. And I've not made this clear, actually. It's a great question. Initially, when I went to the court case at first, what we're talking about, 6 years ago now, I came across that early Freeman stuff. And initially, the first time I ever went to court, I thought, I'll see if there's any justice in that place. I was only just learning. And as soon as I come out, I realised there wasn't. So second time I ever went into court, and I realised what happened a couple of weeks before. And so I thought, right, there's not going to be no justice. I'm going to learn the system. And so I went in the first 2 or 3 times, and I didn't really have to go. And I was reading stuff that's saying, don't go to court, unless you really have to go. But I thought, well, if nobody goes, one, we're not going to learn their system and what they're actually doing to us. And two, we're not putting that positive energy, because I think I mentioned before, though, every time I went along there, I'm sorry, I don't know what to call them, normal people, unawakened people were starting to think, what was this up to, like? He's not scared, he's not bowing down. And so I kind of left a bit of a positive energy in there, that you don't have to bow and stoop and call them your worship and bow down to them. You don't have to be arrogant, but you can be confident of who you are. And I acted like a sovereign from the moment I stepped in there, because I am a sovereign. I already knew that. So yeah, I would say under no circumstances ever go to court ever. But that I made a bit long-winded of it last week. That court case I was talking about, I actually got kidnapped and dragged in there. Now, for our listeners, at some point, some people are going to get kidnapped and dragged in there. Now, avoid it at all costs. Do not go to court for bills, alleged debts, or anything. But don't forget, twice now they've tried to repossess my house. So I was forced to go along to county court there. And then obviously when I've been arrested and dragged in the place, then I'm obviously there, aren't I? And they're going to come and arrest me anyway. So the way to sort it out is to never set foot in place. And I'm quite confident now, by having those early experiences, that I can now do it with paperwork and not have to go in there. But yeah, I suppose the concise answer is don't ever set foot in their place of business if you can help it.
I think apart from that time that you were dragged in from talking with you, the only other time that you've sort of gone in there is when the warrant of entry's been likely, isn't it?
It is, and I always tell people I'm really lucky. I've been really lucky, and they always correct me and say, no, it's because you're trying to act honourably and help people that things work out, and I'm starting to think they're right. I ran a gas bill up for, I think, £3,600. Just to try and, like I said, push the boundaries out. In fact, it's still now, it's like a bloody Amazon rainforest in my house. Even the paint on the walls are bubbling, it's that flipping hot in here. The rubber plant's about 6 foot now, I've only started out a foot. Yeah, so I purposely ran this gas bill up just to see what would happen. And I had a friend who used to work for gas people, and I said, oh, they want to fit me a prepay meter in. And I showed him a meter, and just by pure look, it says, Where it's inside my house, there's a raised wooden floor. And he says, Rob, he says, they can't ever figure a prepay meter. And I said, why not? He said, well, they'd have to rip all your wooden floors up. He said, they won't do that. Because it was really close, you see, on a raised area. And so knowing that, I went along to court knowing no matter what they did, even if I lost, which I did a few times, they could never fit me a prepay meter in any way. Because they'd have to rip all my house up. They couldn't do that. So that's what I mean. I was really lucky. So I played a bit of a game. And I used that opportunity, which you shouldn't do. I stress, do not go to court unless you can help it. I used that opportunity. In fact, I went to court probably 5 times over gas and had a great laugh doing it all, every time. That's when I went in as an Apache Red Indian and stuff like that.
The thing is that you're making a virtue of necessity, aren't you, really? To a certain extent, you're going in there in order to find out what's going on, because it was generally, it is kind of widely acknowledged that by and large you stand no chance when you enter the play court as it was. There's a sort of small percentage of people who are allowed to look like they've won to keep the others playing, as it were. But basically, you did manage to demonstrate that even in their own terms, you could go in there and talk as the dead, as it were, and come out at least with the appearance of a victory.
Yeah, and I would say I got, more often than not, I got stalemates. I got no action taken against me, but I neither got anything from it other than experience. So a lot of the time it was a stalemate, which at that stage in my career, I like to call it a career because I don't get paid for it. at that stage, as I was evolving, for me, a stalemate, and the other side went away, that was a victory to me. As long as they didn't undertake the action they were threatening, then I viewed it as a victory and I just wanted to be left alone. But this last sort of 18 months or so, though, that's not enough for me now. I don't just want them to leave me alone. I want to hold them personally accountable, each one of them now, privately and personally accountable. So that's the way I'm going now. I'm learning about court documents, and what I'm trying to do is, I'm trying to use their system. Well, I've always said I'm using their system against them. That's why that court case I mentioned last week, it was a really bad time to experiment, because if I got it wrong, I've got 6 months prison. But I know that, I used to think it was a perfect system, and as I've gained in knowledge and experience, even their system's got holes in it, and that's what I exploited and showed that when I beat one of those 4 charges. So you can actually use their system, but the point is, the way to do it is not to set foot in court. You are a dead entity, quite right, as you say. That's why we get summons, as we know. You can only summons the dead. And when they want you to appear, only ghosts appear, don't they? Spirits.
Yeah. And if you did, well, I mean, you obviously, you had, as you said, about 3 weeks to prepare for this particular event. How easy is it to understand the rules of court like? Because presumably that's quite important, is it, to get some sort of grasp of how the game's played?
It's not easy at all. The reason being is every court case is different, and they keep changing the goalposts depending on who's out there. They change it every single time. In fact, this fits in lovely, Doc, because at some point today I want to show, I'd like to just tell you briefly for 2 or 3 minutes what I've come across these last 2 weeks. And it's about law. And believe it or not, and it's a weird approach, and I don't know if anybody else has thought of this, but there is no law, Doc. There's no such thing. And now I'm approaching it as there is no law. It's a construct invented by evil men and put in our minds. And it sounds bollocks, and people listening probably think, what's he on about? But when I do explain it, if we can fit it in a bit, because it'll take a few minutes.
Yeah.
There is no law, mate. There's absolutely no law whatsoever.
Well, sounds like as good a place to start as any.
I know, exactly. Well, they don't abide by the law, do they? And they want us to abide by the law, whatever the law is. This is what I mean about the stage of evolution, of awakening. I've now come accustomed to realising. In fact, something in the chat room just put, after all, it's just a hearing. And that's absolutely spot on. I think it's Mark from the chat room there.
Yeah.
Absolutely spot on. What I realised is from a very early, when I started getting into this, is that you go along to a hearing, because originally law was the spoken word, orally. They'd have you believe it's all written on paper, because that's how they love it. But originally, 100 centuries ago, it was spoken. That's why you go to a hearing.
And in a way, it still applies now, doesn't it? Because it's you speaking your name that they need to hear.
It is. And if you're writing or speaking in sentences, you are incriminating yourself through those sentences. You're sentencing yourself, you see.
Yeah.
And what I realised is now is that all law is, any law, and I'll go into common law and stuff like that, is interpretation of words. That's it. That's all law is. And that's why it's a construct and a fiction, because we interpret it one way and they interpret it another way. And it's subjective because it's not real. It's as fictional as anything else.
It's an amazingly huge and complex fiction, though, isn't it?
Well, wow. I don't know who's at the back of all this. I suspect who or what's at the back of this. And I can't imagine a group of human minds centuries ago, or 2,000 years ago, or 5,000 years ago, whatever it is, I can't comprehend that a group of human minds has come up with a system so perfect, so complex, so incredible, really, even down to the spoken word that, as we know, casts spells. It's just beyond, I think, human design, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, indeed. But still got some dodgy bits at the seams, it would appear.
Well, what it is what I mean, the whole, I'm not just talking about the law, mainly legislation, but I mean the whole system, the whole thing works. The duping of mankind into creating our own prison planet. The whole thing I'm talking about is perfect, but the legal system, and that's what I'm mainly focusing on, is not perfect. That's the thing that I've exploited, has got holes in it, and that's the stuff I have exploited. But the system as a whole, the complete system, is just an incredible thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I suppose perhaps a kind of general guide might be that what works for them appears to work for us, although the rest of it's a complete illusion. But even the fact that it works for anybody, you know, I've been thinking that about your experiences and stuff, the fact that it works for anybody is sort of amazing.
You mean anybody who can get any sort of remedy against them?
Yes, or at least, as you say, kind of get them to go away.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, really, isn't it? And we are looking at, I think I sent you, Doc, those 12 key presumptions from the Roman law stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's, I don't know if you've got time to look at it, but the same thing's happening now, and that's 2,500 years old. I've read stuff about Egypt and how they ran stuff. They had persons, as in legal personalities and slaves, but they had persons, they had a monetary structure, same. And then going back even further, and we don't know how accurate these records are, but even back to Phoenicia and Babylon and Assyria, they had a similar sort of system. So we're looking at least a 5,000 year old system. And so when anybody stands up against these people, and this is how I approach it, Doc, it's already a victory. If I'm standing on it and I've not caused harm to another living soul, then when I stand up there, whether I go in that place or send me documents off or me notice, whatever I do, I've already won, mate. Whatever action they take on me, they will have to take unlawful action against me. So by design, I've won. By its very nature, I've instantly won anyway. And if we can start looking at, it doesn't matter if I get 6 weeks in prison, or 3 days, or they steal my car, or they kick me out of my house, it doesn't matter because I've still won. It's still a victory because I'm acting in honour and they're acting in dishonour. So eventually there'll be a tipping point and more people come forward. And I can lose my possessions. I don't own them anyway. I can't own the house. I can't own a piece of planet Earth. You know, this land and this house I'm living on, it's not mine. I can't own a piece of planet Earth. I'm just looking after it. I'm just a custodian for that piece of land. So when I look at it like that, I can't really lose. I can never lose because I'm acting in honour, and all they can do is act unlawfully to get the news force to get the better of me, so I've won anyway, mate.
Yeah, because as we say, the intent's really, really important. And that's, I think, one of the good things about your tales of the court, as it were, is that the basic rumour that people don't win and that it's, you know, is not a healthy way to approach the situation. You seem to approach it with a lot more confidence and so get better results.
Yeah, it's down to fear. It's all down to fear, and as we know, it's a fear-based system. And I don't do fear. I never did fear much anyway before, even when I didn't know what we were doing. And I've not got an ounce of fear, an element of fear. It never enters my head, really, fear. And that's not because I'm a big macho bloke. It's because I know who I am, and this is what it's about. This is why they create an identity for you, a reflection, a persona, a government-backed ID, because they don't want us knowing who we are. Mm-hmm. And once we recognise who we are, most of us know who we are. As a two-year-old little kid, my mum used to say to me, when you were 2 years old, nobody could ever tell you what to do. But if somebody asked me to do something, I'll hand over backwards to help someone. But I recognise that there's no such thing as authority, that nobody could tell me what to do.
Yeah.
That's from being a little kid, and I guess we're all the same deep down.
Well, I guess if the dark T-shirts have been kind of running it for 5,200 years, then we've been running the resistance for just as long, probably.
Yeah, I think this has happened loads of times where, you know, sentient beings like ourselves have gathered together and thought, we're not having this, we're not taking this. Yeah, I think it's happened many, many times.
Well, another question that came up in the chat box, or another subject in one of our earlier chats, which I think might be worth having a quick look at. We were talking rather usefully about what it was like in a police station, and you were telling us that their procedures and stuff demand that they're kind of polite and what have you. And we got a message from Cersei which said, "Hey Rob, I went 20 hours in the nick, presumably, no consent, and asked if anything offered was a benefit or a privilege. Then under threat of further assault, back down to have fingerprints taken, with the desk staff stating in cell they knew they could not force me, but then said they would." So how would you approach, you know, somebody basically trying to use duress and threats of force and stuff to get you to say give them a set of fingerprints?
Well, they've done it with me. They've tried it with me. I've been there. I know. I feel for him. In fact, I've met him at, I've met Cersei at a talk about 18 months ago. He doesn't live far from me. The thing is, if it happens on the street, you can tell them to walk away. You can walk away yourself. And if they try and touch you, you can defend yourself. Not police officers, but anybody.
Yeah.
But when you're kidnapped and you're under lock and key and you're inside their building, there's not a lot you can do because there's much more of them than us. You're on your own and they've got the weapons. So the best thing to do is to deny consent. Do not agree to absolutely anything. And if they have to force you, they wish they did with me. They cuffed me to get me fingerprints because I just wouldn't consent. I just kept pulling my hands away. I don't think he even spoke. Go on, mate. Were you going to say something?
No.
Okay.
No, I was agreeing.
All right. Have you been there as well?
No, I haven't. No, but I know several that have.
Okay. They kept saying I wanted fingerprints, and I just wouldn't do it. And then about four of them came round, and then they cuffed me. And they said, "We're going to cuff you now and force you," and I still wouldn't do it because it kept smudging and pulling away. And then one of the officers got his stick thing out and said, "If you don't, I'm going to use this." And that's when I did speak. And I said, be very careful what action you take now, because you're acting unlawfully. And sometime, not now, not today, not tomorrow, I'm going to be bringing action against you personally. And I left it at that. In the end, they got a smudged, sort of ink splattering. And then, for some reason, they wanted to take a photograph. So I was kind of up for this till I realised that I got a number in front of me. And I just kept putting the number down and dropping my head down. And they kept telling me, they kept trying to get me to lift my head up. And I think they got, what did they say? Just keep a straight face. So then I had a big stupid smile on my face and pulled at that face. So everything not to consent. I mean, how are they going to get me to smile and hold a number plate up type of thing? And in the end, I think they took a photograph with me with my head down and all crumpled up, like, just not sitting up straight. And I don't think they got anything. And nothing came of that particular occasion, so I don't think they got anything. But, yeah, I feel for that lad. But there's not a lot you can do. And the object is to get out of there as fast as possible and try your best not to contract. And if you do contract, it is under threat. Protest and duress, and there's always something you can do after.
Yeah, yes, indeed, yeah. Because if you've accepted and acknowledged our oath of office and things like that, then the stuff they do to you that's outside the office can be made to count later, can't it?
It can, yeah. And it's all about taking it to a higher jurisdiction. Just looking at some fantastic comments coming in the chat room there. Yeah, so, some great.
Go for it.
So I wasn't going to go through. I'm just making an observation that
there's
some great comments in there.
Yeah, indeed. All starts when you register a birth, you become part of the system, and that's the system that's being visited on us without a doubt, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Lots of gangs in this country, but the cops have the biggest gang of them all. Well, again, I mean, you know, I don't see really what the difference is between a gang and a corporation, really. You could look at it as basically a kind of, it is a sort of gangland that they're running, isn't it? They're kind of mafia.
Absolutely, 100% mafia. In fact, it's worse than mafia because they've got a much bigger army than the mafia. It's exactly the same. It's pure and simply a protection racket. That's exactly what it is. Give us your money and we'll protect you. If not, we'll take the action, the violence against you that we're protecting you from. If you think about it like that, the only difference is they wear nice shiny uniforms, don't they? Nice costumes. They've got lovely badges, haven't they, and pieces of paper.
Yeah,
but for that, it's the biggest protection racket. And it's global, isn't it? It's worldwide.
Yeah. Money makers for their station, government officials. I gather that if you get yourself voted into the House of Lies, as it were, I'm told you're likely to make something like £500,000 in your 5 years or whatever it is.
Wow.
And, no qualifications are necessary. You know, it's one of the best paid unqualified jobs around by the sound of it.
I think no qualifications is compulsory, I think.
Yeah.
Hey, did you hear about the cop in America had an IQ of, I think average IQ is about 100. Actually, do you know I've got an IQ of 148, my IQ, which I don't even know, I don't put much weight on it. But average IQ is 100, and a cop in America got an IQ of 120 when he was going in, and they wouldn't take him on because his IQ was too high. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
That is interesting, isn't it? I guess that,
yeah.
I mean, I know I've watched a bit of that Darren Brown character who does pretty amazing things with people, but he starts with a large group of people and finds only two or three that it would actually work on, in all honesty. And I guess that the people who are recruiting for the police and the army and the like, and many other things now, are looking for the same thing. You know, you want somebody who's going to comply, don't you?
You do, and it's down to personality, isn't it? I think it's all about your personality traits, how you've gone through the public fool system, and that's what they want. It's all about personality. It's nothing to do with your ability. They want a certain type, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, indeed they do. Yeah, and it seems to me, I mean, you know, that's happening at a level of councils and everything now, because I know that in mid-Wales, the council has experienced that basically a whole series of sort of... I guess what we might call redundancies. And it seems to me that decisions are made on who's going by people who refuse to do the new things that they're told to do, really. So they keep managing to shave more and more people out of there and yet still cost us more and more money. It's a very clever trick.
It's very clever, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely right.
So I thought we had a brief chat about the birth certificate. I take it you're still moving on that one. You are going to be you're going to be practicing that sometime soon, aren't you? Trying to accept the charge.
Yeah, I've got a friend of, well, it's not my friend, it's a friend of a friend, and he's got a court case coming up. He said it was 2 weeks, but I think it's a bit longer yet, so it's probably 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
And I've not actually met him yet. I've spoken to him on the phone. And he wants to try it, and so I'm going to, I think I'll probably meet him next week, just run through what we're going to do. I'm going to try it. For anybody who's not sure what I'm talking about, is we're going to try and discharge any charges he's got using the birth certificate, but not pleading against any crime or offence. And I think that the way to do this is, I think we're going to try and arrange a private meeting with the magistrates or the clerk before his hearing comes up in public. Because I think if they're going to go for it, they're not going to go for it in public. And we're going to try, I'm going to speak for him. He's going to be there, and he wants me to speak for him. And without prejudice, so we won't be getting in trouble for it. And it's an offer and a counter offer, and we're going to offer, willingly offer up the birth certificate, this commercial instrument, in order to discharge any charges that are against him, and see how we're going with that. I don't know how much success we're going to have, but it's going to be fun.
Yeah, indeed, sounds like a good one, and that could be quite an extensive discovery if it can be made to work. So we reckon that definitely keeping hold of the birth certificate, I mean, it's not just for that reason, I think it's worth keeping hold of the birth certificate for others too. We had an extensive talk about how you really don't need a driving licence or, in fact, any other sort of licence by extension. And I was wondering whether we might have a quick chat about that other major item of identification, shall we say, the passport, because it seems to me to be a very interesting document. I've been wondering, like, for some time, you know, you said last week that our carriages, when they're registered under certain laws, become effectively marine vessels. Does that mean that roadside stops by the police are in fact temporary ports?
Well, the roadside stop's not a temporary port. You're on the waterways there, because it covers, you're classed as inland waterways. And then your house is a warehouse on the waterways. It's all waterways. That's why they're called roads, because, you know, you've rowed your boat, sort of thing.
Really? I know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's a great game, the word game. I love it.
Do you like it as well?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I'm quite a bit of a wordsmith, you see, so I come across this. I said to my mate, Rob Beals, I was chatting to him about it, and I said, Rob, he's about the same age as me. I said, Rob, what were roundabouts called when we were little? He said, roundabouts. I said, no, what were they called? I remember taking driving tests when I was about 18. And he said, go right round the island. They used to be called islands, didn't they?
Yeah.
A roundabout was called an island.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. So it's all waterways. And your house is a warehouse on the waterway. I've gone off there what we were talking about. Oh, we were talking about passports, weren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, and whether it was a port or not.
Well, actually, there's a massive similarity between local, I'll get this right, local authority, such as your councils, and port authorities. It's the same thing. Yeah?
Yeah.
And also, the reason you have a passport is you either stop off at ports or you're in between ports, which is why you have to have your passport. Well, that's why they tell you have to have your passport. So, if you want to go abroad, you're passing one port and going to another. But at any one time, you're either at a port or in between ports. So all the time, you're seafaring, you're a vessel, aren't you?
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
We haven't had passports for that long, have we? When did they come about? Did they grow out of something else, or did they just sort of suddenly appear fully formed?
Do you know, it's a great question, and I'm not sure. I can remember watching them old black and white Second World War films. I don't know if you can remember them when we were kids. And the German soldiers, whoever the public were at that time, and they always used to say, papers, give me your papers, and they just had to show them the papers. And what I realised is that is some sort of passport that they were showing. You know, so obviously that's way back in 1940, shouldn't it, and onwards. So I'm guessing it came before that. I'm not entirely sure, actually. But you sent me the writing that's on it. You know about the Britannic Majesty?
Yeah. I thought that's because it's an interesting thing to have written on a document, isn't it? I have got it in front of me here, and it's loaded with interesting looking words. What it actually says on it is Her Britannic Majesty's Secretary of State requests and requires all those whom it may concern to allow the bearer to pass freely without let or hindrance, and to afford the bearer such assistance and protection as may be necessary. Which sounds like a pretty powerful spell to me, and I do know people who've had considerable success when they have been pulled over by the police. One of them, in fact, he was actually stopped because he had, I think one of his headlights was only on dip beam, and I think he was maybe doing a bit more than 30 miles an hour, and there was a small bit hanging off the front of the car as well, and he'd been seen going into town, and then he was seen again coming out again, so they pulled him gently over, and he basically showed them the passport and showed them the bit that I've just read you, and the policeman concerned basically laughed. He thought it was really brilliant, and he said, "That's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant, that is." And he gave the passport back and advised the man in the machine basically to get the various bits and bobs fixed, which I thought was really great. It might have helped that he did actually have an entire car full of women and children as well.
Okay. really, all he's done is shown government ID. That's all he's done, really, so that's why he's accepted it. But did you know that just read out, Doc, did you know that that's a diluted version, a reduced version of the actual proper wording?
No.
I think in 1979, I think it was, from 1979, that wording that you've just read out is a diluted, reduced version. Do you want to hear the proper version? It's almost the same, but some key differences.
Yeah, I'd be very interested.
I've got it, I saved it. And then when you mentioned it earlier, I go, oh yeah, okay. Very similar, but there's key differences. This is what it should say, and they've watered it down to what you've just read. But it should say, Her Britannic Majesty's Principal Secretary of State for Foreign and Commonwealth Affairs requests and requires, two keywords, I'll read that again, requests and requires, in the name of Her Majesty, all those whom it may concern to allow the bearer to pass freely without let or hindrance, and to afford the bearer such assistance and protection as may be necessary. Now, that's not exactly the same thing, is it, mate?
No, it's not.
And they've watered that down now to what you've just read out. On yours, it says to afford the bearer such assistance and protection as may be necessary. Oh, that's the same bit. That's the same.
Yeah.
Is that the same?
Yeah, it's the in the name of Her Britannic Majesty. It's in the name of Her Majesty that's one of the things that's missing.
And it says Britannic Majesty's Principal Secretary of State.
Yeah.
So is there more than one? Principal Secretary of State for Foreign and Commonwealth Affairs. And that's not what it says on that one, is it, that you read out?
No.
So it's obviously we know about the words and stuff. So, yeah, it's slightly different there, isn't it?
Yeah. I was quite interested when I went looking for the word require in my copy of Black's Ninth that I've got sitting around. The word require seemed to be missing. And then I found that the word must is missing as well. And I found out, this is one of my discoveries that made me laugh this week, is that question is defined as a query directed at a witness. That's what it says.
Wow. Question really? Wow.
Yeah, which I thought was really brilliant. And then so I looked up query, and that's not in there as well. I mean, of all these words, has the word require never been in the Black's Law Dictionary, or has it been disappeared?
I think it was in the early ones, and I think they've let it, I know must was in up to about, I think, the third or fourth, and that's gone now, because people were cutting on that it's synonymous with may. It doesn't mean you have to. And request and require, I think, if they have fizzled out, it must only be lately. In fact, I think I've got 9 versions of Black's Law, so I will have a look.
It would be
but
great. Another one that wasn't in there was recognise. They've got recognizance,
really?
And all of that, but actual the word recognise is not listed in the 9th one. So, well, where do you suppose all of them, if there are, it'd be great for you to have a look, because I'd love to know, you know, if they did disappear, when they disappeared, and what they meant the year before they were kind of redacted, as it were. It's very 1984, though, isn't it? Words
very,
just disappearing.
It? Yeah, absolutely, isn't it? Eradicating certain words, isn't it? And this is the thing about that legalese that they use. They can extend the meaning of a word, or they can change it completely. Or they can just eradicate it and just put something in its place. And this is the thing about that. It's the language of, this is what I meant about there is no law, Doc. It's all interpretation of words. And they can pick and choose and do what they want and change the meaning. And that's to keep, this is what people say to me, well, when you go to court or whatever, can you tell me what to do? And I said, well, no, I can't, because it's changing, it's constantly in flux. They're changing the words, they're changing the way they do things, and we've got to change with it. That early Freeman on the Land stuff, and it gets a bit of a slating now. And I always stick up for it, because when I first started, I had a look at that, and there are no remedies in that Freeman on the Land stuff now. But because of it is why we've evolved to where we are now, and it played a great part. It first identified that you have a person, and that the other stuff is our corporations, and it identified the difference between what's legal and lawful. So fair play, I know some people are still stuck in that Freeman on the Land stuff, but all I'm saying to people is if you're going to have a go, you've got to evolve with the system, it's constantly changing, so we've got to constantly change.
Yeah, I genuinely think, I'm of a mind with you on that one, because for me, the Freeman on the Land material was very much a launching ramp, if you like, and I was given a copy of Freedom is More Than Just a Seven Letter Word by Veronica Chapman at a free Truth Juice talk I was doing, and I saw a copy there that was really well thumbed. I thought, well, I'll give it a look. Well, I took it to the bed and breakfast where I was staying, and I didn't go to sleep till I'd read the whole book, because it's not very long. And when I got to the end of it, I did say hallelujah. I recognised that there was a whole load of stuff in there which was important. And okay, some of the solutions might be a little difficult to pull off or have the odds running a bit against them. But the actual outlining of the problem of the money and the bailiffs and the courts and the corporation, as you say, and the name and all of that is really brilliant, I think. You know, it's difficult to think of a place where so much good info is concentrated in easy-to-read form.
It's a fantastic book. I've read it 3 times over the years. And what she's saying, Veronica, is absolutely spot on. The only reason the solutions aren't working now is because the other side have adapted to Freeman, and so we've got to adapt with them. But initially, yeah, fantastic information. Yeah. One of the first books I ever read was by Mary Croft. In fact, it was the first book I ever read on all this. I don't know if you've come across it, Doc, all the commerce and stuff. And even hers has slightly changed now, the solutions, because they've changed the system. But it's a long read, but it's a great book as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely out there, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And these type of people first, you know, made people aware. So, great, you know, fair play to them, but we have got to keep changing. But like I said, Doc, it's all interpretation of words, and hopefully at some point tonight I'll be able to explain what I mean. Is there is no law. It's just, we're just engaging in a fiction again, in a lie.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of comments in the chat box. Spud's put in, well, Dr. Rock, I was under the impression that the word passport is an abbreviation of passport cullis, permission to enter gated towns, cities and castles, and was a defence against enemies and potential disease carriers.
Wow, that makes sense, doesn't it? I didn't know that, but yeah, nice one, that makes sense.
Yeah, and there's a question from Salver Veritate, which says, can your guest explain anything regarding the quasi-contract? What is it? How is it employed, etc.?
Okay, interesting question. It's not something I know much about. I'm presuming it, a quasi or quasi contract is, well, there aren't even any contracts in place anyway, are there? I'm not exactly sure what a quasi contract is. Is that a contract arising from an original contract? Is that what they mean? Would they be able to tell you? Do you know what it actually means?
No, I don't. No, I have noticed that there are certain key words in the law dictionaries that have many different words that come before them. Contract's one of them. Very, very, if ignorance is no excuse, it's extremely difficult to get a grip on such a wide variety of different things. But I will ask and see if they get back to me.
Guess that a quasi contract is a, I'm guessing that it's an implied contract and not an express one. But maybe they could tell us exactly what it means.
Yeah, I will ask them in the chat box there, and we will, yeah. It's always good to have questions and things.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So basically the passport really is the mark of a citizen, or indeed a subject, I guess, then, isn't it?
Absolutely, and all government ideas, the whole thing, it's you are reduced to a citizen. And you're ascribed certain privileges and benefits and rights that can be taken away. And as soon as you are a citizen, in the grand scheme of things, you've got no real fundamental freedoms and rights. And that's what you give up for the protection of the state. And that's what it is. It's a swap for, it's a swap for our fundamental freedoms for security and protection, and that's what being a citizen is, or a civilian, or whatever you want to call it, or a corporate, you know, entity, a corporate entity name or whatever it is. And that's what it is. It's a swap for your fundamental freedoms and rights for security and protection, or for the perceived security and protection.
Yeah, indeed, it's not turning out to be very good security or protection, is it, really? A bit of a
rug. No, you're right, mate. Well, the very ones they are protecting us from, that comes back to the protection racket, is them themselves. You know, it's we're going to come and kick the shit out of you and take everything off you if you don't pay us. But if you do pay us, we'll make sure nobody else does it to you. I mean, that's what we're faced. That's what we're looking at.
Which is just exactly a protection.
Absolutely. Racket.
Here we go. Tubad's put in the chat box. He's put quasi-contract, an obligation that the law creates in the absence of an agreement between the parties. Ooh. It is invoked by the courts where unjust enrichment, which occurs when a person retains money or benefits that in all fairness belong to another, would exist without judicial relief, it says.
Okay, so it is an obligation that the law creates in the absence of an agreement. So it is... It is what I said. It's almost like an implied contract that arises in the absence of an agreement. But how can you have, once again, first line, quasi-contract, whatever it is, an obligation that the law creates? Well, what's the law? Which law? What's the law? Is it? Is it? Are they statutory laws? What law is it? Can you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So once again, it's just a construct again.
And yeah, I mean, in the absence of an agreement between the parties, where's the contract?
Exactly, there's no original, I was almost there. There's no original contract, so are we saying that an implied contract arises from there not being a contract in place in place originally? It just doesn't make sense. It's a fiction, isn't it?
It is, yeah, a real fairy tale, that one. But you can see how people might just, because obviously if somebody consents to it, then it becomes as real as anything else, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and there again, they've put a scam and had adhesion contracts, absolutely fantastic, yeah. An adhesion contract, and I guess most people know what an adhesion contract is, yeah?
I think so. Quick summary, though, because there's always some new people around.
Okay.
Contracts are important things, aren't they? It's
yeah.
The basis of the whole goddamn thing.
Yeah. Well, an adhesion contract is if you substitute, take away the last few letters, it's an adhesion con. It's just a con. It's no contract. It's where one party has all the benefits, and you get nothing as the other party to this contract. It's forced on you, and one side has got all the benefits, and the other side has got absolutely nothing. And it's the same thing as if you get done for speeding, a cop pulls you over, you sat in the back of a car, that's an adhesion contract. You want your government give an ID. As soon as it does, your option is pay up in 2 weeks or go to court. That's it. That's an adhesion contract. You've got no remedy. You've got no recourse. You either pay up so you're guilty, pay the fine now, in 2 weeks it'll go up, it'll double, if not, the option is to go and argue it out in court in their place of business. So that's an example of an adhesion contract.
Yeah, yep, and that's one of the most common, it has to be said, seems to be more or less everywhere.
Yeah, and we know for a contract to be valid, it has to have certain things in place. As we know, it has to be... It has to have full disclosure, for instance. Both parties have to know everything about it. Well, an adhesion contract can't be a contract. It has to be an equal consideration, an equal amount of value or risk from both parties. That doesn't happen, especially on an adhesion contract. Lawful terms and conditions, you have to know everything. If you and I create a contract, Doc, I can't then add stuff to it later on, which is what they do, unless we've discussed all terms first and agree, and it's obviously a meeting of the minds for a contract to exist.
And then
it's called. Sorry, mate. Go.
There can't be any variables in a contract, can there? Otherwise, it invalidates the rest of the contract.
Yeah, and if it's written, you've both got to sign with it. You've both got to bring something to the table. It's called a bilateral contract. A bilateral meaning two, as in bicycle. And all we ever get is they call them contracts, but they're what's called. It's an agreement. And it's only ever signed by one party, which is us. They'll never sign it. So they are addressing agreements up as contracts, and there's no full disclosure, but more importantly, there's not two signatures to it. Both parties don't sign it, so it's just an agreement. An agreement really is, it's called a unilateral unenforceable agreement. Unilateral meaning one. So an agreement, in my eyes, can never ever be enforced because it's just an agreement. You know, if I agree to meet you tomorrow at the zoo and I don't turn up, there's not a lot you can do, is there? You know what I mean? It says, I know it's because I am really simple, like I said before, but if I assign something and we both bring something to the table and then I'm bound by what I've signed and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, well, if I don't do it, then you've got suffered some sort of harm. You've got a right then because I'm breaching on that contract. But we have to know all about it first, full disclosure, and both sign it and agree. So bilateral instead of a unilateral, unenforceable agreement.
Yeah. Ian alone has put into the chat box, he's put adhesions equals two differing unequal parties and cohesion equals two equal bodies or parties.
Brilliant. Love it. Brilliant. And somebody mentioned unjust enrichment.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that was tied up with quasi the two bads quasi contract that he put. It is invoked. I love this. It is invoked by the courts where unjust enrichment, which occurs when a person retains money or benefits that in all fairness belong to another, would exist without judicial relief.
Absolutely. Unjust enrichment is where, exactly right, where, it's usually a corporation, but where one party unjustly benefits in some way at the expense of the other, and it's obviously unlawful enrichment. Yeah, absolutely. A good point there as well. Somebody put, who signs for the bank when you take out a mortgage? It only has a space for yours. And that, again, Mark in the chat room there, spot on again. There is no original contract for the mortgage, is there? And again, only whoever puts pen to paper and puts the sign of nature down, the signature, their sign of nature, instantly becomes liable if it goes tits up. And that's why they'll never sign it, and that's why they throw all the liability onto us. And so it can't be an original and proper lawful contract, can it? And this is the scope now of the corruption, isn't it?
Mm. And the mortgage thing really is a major challenge, isn't it? In that, it seems to me that they are void documents in just so many ways that it's amazing that anybody still manages to sell them, really.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's unbelievable. Right from the start, they don't even, as we know, they don't lend you anything, do they? And then the whole thing's just corrupt right from the second that you approach them to when they usually kick you out and take it back. Although, it's called a repossession. They never owned it anyway, so it ought to just be called a possession. Right from the second you put your moniker on that paper to the time they kick you out and grab it off you, it's the whole thing's corrupt all the way through, isn't it?
It is, and I mean, it's really extensive, isn't it? Because I was talking to Simon Spaniard about this, and he was telling me that it took him 3 years to actually get a copy of the terms and conditions for his mortgage out of Santander, or Red Satan, as he calls them.
Yeah.
And he'd been in to see them 3 years before and said, am I, by executing this deed, somehow handing over a lasting power of attorney to you? And they said, no, Mr. Spaniard, you're not. So he said, I'll see the terms and conditions, which took him 3 years to get them to him. And he was still paying the mortgage, you know, to keep himself in honour and all of that. And eventually he did find that it would appear that at the heart of all Santander mortgages, you hand over this enduring power of attorney, which means these people can create financial instruments, strictly speaking, you know, under your name or the name of your straw party, and secured on the loan note that you raised to get the house, and technically at your liability and without your knowledge. And I was absolutely astonished.
Well, that's absolutely right. We are tricked. We just give away power of attorney and they can do what the hell they want. When we do sign for the mortgage, we've already given away power of attorney anyway. That's why they can do what they want. In fact, I've posted something really interesting that I came across. I wonder if I can just read it out, because it fits in lovely with this.
Yeah.
I've posted it on some chat rooms I'm in. Okay, I've got it here. This is really interesting. Can I just read this out, though? Because this fits in with the mortgage and everything, yeah?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, I'm just out of the chat room, so I can't see the comments, but if you can keep an eye out for me. Okay, cheers. This is called tacit procuration. This is what happens in every walk of life, this. Okay, tacit procuration, okay. Tacit obviously means you agree by your silence, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, we know about tacit agreements and stuff. If you keep silent about something, then you are agreeing to it.
Yeah, you acquiesce, don't you, by not objecting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And a I can't spell it, procuration, that's it, is an act by which one person gives power to another to act in his place as he could do himself, as in a letter of attorney. So that's what a procuration means, yeah?
Can you read that to me again?
I will, yeah. A procuration is an act by which one person gives power to another to act in his place as he could do himself, such as a letter of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, a tacit procuration, okay, a procuration can either be expressed or implied. So you don't have to actually express it. If you imply it, and a tacit procuration means that you're implying it with your silence, you're agreeing to it. So when we sign our mortgage papers, we're tacitly, silently agreeing to procuration, which means we're giving the power over to the mortgage company to do it for us, a letter of attorney, power of attorney, basically, yeah?
And is that true of all mortgages, do you think?
No, well, no, it's true of everything, mate. It's true of absolutely everything. I'll just read you this, what tacit procuration, what I found and put together. It's not long. And this is everything. This is from the state stealing your children, to taking your house, to stealing your cars. This is why they can do it. Because every time you register something, you are creating tacit procuration, okay? We're giving away power of attorney. They can do what they want. I'll just read you this. If you allow others to handle your affairs, you give them power of attorney. You grant the power of attorney by getting a number, okay? You usually get a number, whether it's a reference number or whatever. That's the proof that you've granted power of attorney. They can seize your property without a court order, without proof of a violation. How familiar does this sound? I'll read this again. Getting the number is proof. See how familiar this sounds. They can seize your property without a court order, without proof of a violation, without a judge's signature, and without even starting any court proceedings. Now,
what?
That is a very...
What? Yeah, is that right?
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
You can see...
By us... Go on, mate. Sorry.
Yeah, once you see it described like that, suddenly you become aware that that's exactly what's going on.
I know. This is why another reason that's pointless going to court, because they win... can I just read a little bit more, Doc? Is it all right? Yeah,
yeah.
On this, it says, go to any library and look up procuration in a law dictionary. It says, pay special attention to tacit procuration. An implied or tacit procuration takes place when an individual seeks another managing his affairs and does not interfere to prevent it. I'll read that again. An implied or tacit procuration takes place when an individual sees another managing his affairs and does not interfere to prevent it. Okay, if somebody's managing your affairs and you don't interfere to prevent it, you are thus creating a tacit procuration and giving away power of attorney.
Wow.
By doing nothing, you... Sorry, mate.
Where's this particular definition you've got?
I've got it in loads of stuff, and I'll send you this. Yeah. I'll send anybody that wants it. I'll just carry on. It's another two or three lines, and I'll finish it. By doing nothing, you grant the power of attorney. If you see the government handling any of your affairs and you do not interfere to prevent it, I'll miss that bit off. Get this, you're going to love this bit, well, you're going to hate it, really. Even acceptance of their control over prescription drugs is proof that you do not manage your own affairs. You, by your action of accepting their management of your affairs, agree that you are incompetent to manage yourself. Last little bit. Even without a signature or an oath, your actions can grant the power of attorney and alter your citizenship. By accepting the benefits of statutory citizenship, you become a statutory citizen. And examples of that are accepting statutory deeds, accepting usury, or voting for bond issues, voting in the elections, confessing that you reside in a postcode, declaring bankruptcy, using the Freedom of Information Act or any statute. This is because persons and corporations get their rights from government, where sovereigns get their rights from God. So what we're saying is, if you engage in any of those, any statute, a Freedom of Information Act, declaring bankruptcy, anything like that, I'll get rid of that now, but I will send it to anybody.
That's a very interesting list, because as you know, I've been quite interested in what it is that makes you a citizen. I got to voting in elections and having a bank account, but that's a very interesting list, that.
And I would add to it, having government-backed ID, you're automatically a citizen, and what you're doing is you're giving, you're creating tacit procuration, which in effect is giving power of attorney. There's no wonder, Doc, they've had our pants down all our lives, is there?
No.
We're willingly giving them. It's like me bursting into your house and suddenly managing, Doc, all your affairs, all your financial affairs, and every move you make, you've got to ask me. That's what we're doing. And because you're not interfering to stop me doing it, you're tacitly thus agreeing to give me power of attorney to act on your behalf in every field you can imagine. But it won't be long before you're hitting me over the head with a pan and telling me to get out, is it? It won't be long.
And that happens every time you're given a number. I wonder if it applies to these loyalty cards at supermarkets and things like that. I've never really trusted them either, but you're getting a number in exchange for a service of some sort, aren't you?
You are, Vin. Every number that you're given is a reference number to something. It refers to something. And what I'm guessing is, I've only just come across this information. Somebody's asking if I've got a link. I'll stick everything I've got. I'll either put in this chat room. I'll pass it on somehow. I will pass it on somehow. Some of these are in files, but I will pass it on. After this show, Doc, I'll be in the chat room and try and pass this information on.
Right, yeah, that'd be really good, yeah, because people can let you know where to send it to. I'd certainly like to see a copy of that list.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it does really, really resonate with me. It makes sense, because if you're not interfering and stopping somebody, basically handling your affairs, and it's come down to authority. If you're letting somebody handle any aspect of your life, then in effect you must be granting them power of attorney, but by consent still, tacitly, you've got to be.
So you're granting power of attorney effectively to your GP by registering?
Funnily enough, I was on a chat room, and that's the first person someone said, and it actually says that on that document that I've just read out. I've not read that bit, but absolutely. Absolutely. As soon as you, you register at a GP, don't you?
Yes.
Kids get registered at school, don't they? And remember what I said, I think I said it last week, we live in this culture, civilization, society, whatever you want to call it, and all day long, somebody somewhere is submitting an application for registration. So you're submitting, you're giving in, you're applying, which means to beg. No one's forcing you, you're begging. So you submit an application to register, to give away, and it's not just giving away title ownership, you're giving away power of attorney, because we are mentally incompetent of doing it ourselves, or we just can't be arsed. And somebody else is taking over, and there's no wonder they're taking the piss. It's like writing a letter to the mafia and saying, please can you visit my house and threaten me with protection, please. It's actually begging for it, and I'll pay you what you want. And that's exactly what we're doing, just by our tacit consent.
Yeah.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember having that discussion with somebody about income tax and trying to convince them that it's entirely voluntary. And they were taking the moral high ground, as alas so often happens. And I said, well, if you saw a bloke standing in a bar getting beaten up, would you feel that it was your duty to get beaten up also?
Yeah, great point.
Well, I think it's probably time for a quick 10 minutes of music and stuff, so we can have a bit of a comfort break and refresh our glasses and stuff. And then maybe when we come back, we can hear why you think there is no law. I must admit, I instinctively tend to agree with you, but it'll be great to hear that, if that's okay with you.
It is. I did it on my own radio show on Critical Mass Radio on Wednesday, and I did this. Yeah, so yeah, it's good. This, you're going to like this. Well, you're not going to like it, but you're going to like that we, and I love it, that we're getting really to the end game now. We're getting really close now, Doc. Yeah, so we're back in 10 minutes, yeah?
Yeah, brilliant. I'll put on 10 minutes of tunes and stuff, and then we will get back to you. Thanks very much. You've been listening to Dr. Rock. You're listening to Dr. Rock's radio show here on peoplesinternetradio.com, and I am known as many things, and that was me speaking with Rob Freeman late last week. And as usual, loads of ground covered there, but I think it's amazing, isn't it? They're basically kind of robbing us of everything and treating us as imbeciles, and that's the way it goes until people start turning around and saying, hold on a moment, something needs to be done here. That is amazing. I love the the total tacit procuration theory, that really it's just the same thing happening again and again. And as I say, I'm very grateful to Rob for coming on and spending so much time with us. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and there's a bit more of that to come, but I thought that, being as the opportunity had presented itself in the pod for some music, I thought I'd play some music. So here's 10 minutes or so of tunes coming up, so it's time to put the kettle on, or indeed just kick back and enjoy the music.
Yodelay, 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 yodelay. those walls. Folks, something's gotta be done. A hardened money's gone bye-bye, gone in that big bank crash. We're in a mess, folks, a terrible mess. We've got credit, but we ain't got cash. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the point in working if you stay in debt? We're gonna break our backs and continue paying tax. Good people, we're a load upset. Good people, we're a load upset. Good people, we're a load upset. You're late. In my hands, I'm wandering slowly to the promised land, and I tried to tell them why, but they couldn't understand. Whoa, bum, doo. I wake up in the morning, I'm feeling alright, but I can see your twisted faces in the morning light, and I smile at the eyes of the fools who were counting up their jewels. Wonderful things they could buy to multiply the stature of the little lies, and they try to put me down, cause the soles of my feet are brown. Yeah, well, I've got some pumpkin pie, I get a bite, don't ask me why. I love a pumpkin pie, makes me fly, takes me to my sky. Don't ask me why. A wheel of our pumpkin pie. Well, I'm quite attuned to mass on the ground. Fat cats and shabby can hear my sound, and I try to let them see what it feels like to be free. Oh, no, no. Steaming by me, they be looking like a swarm of blue-eyed flies, and I try to make them smile. I feel happy when they look me in the eye. Feel happy when they look me in the eye. Feel happy when they look me in the eye. And in the lands of my heart, I'll bite into the bummer's eye. Music, I know a lie. We for free, come and share the streets with me. A pumpkin pie. Pumpkin pie.
That was the John Langan Band and Pumpkin Pie, and that one went out to tonight's guest, Rob Freeman, because I know he enjoyed it last time I played it. Gave him a bit of a bounce around the kitchen. Before that, Rob Heron and the Teapad Orchestra playing Bank Failures, which is a 1920s song. The only old song on there, even though they all sound really a bit oldie-worldy, and Kidnap Alice and Lonesome Road Blues. All three of those bands will be playing at the Tarn and a Mynydd, or Fire in the Mountain Festival out near Aberystwyth, which happens sort of over the end of May and the beginning of June. And I think there's going to be plenty to listen to there. In the meantime, we've got some more Rob Freeman to come up in kind of part two of the third chat that we've had together. As I say, I'm absolutely sure that we'll be having Rob back to talk about many other things in the future. But in the meantime, this is a replay of a chat that we had at the end of last week. Rob Freeman with us as a guest tonight from criticalmassradio.co.uk, and hopefully he can still hear me out there. It's all still looking pretty good here.
Yeah, Doc, loud and clear. I shouted, yee-haw, at the top of my voice while that tune was on. I hope you didn't pick it up. I hope I muted my mic.
No, you had muted your mic, but that's... Actually, the Fire in the Mountain Festival that I've just been mentioning is, in fact, very much a yee-haw straw-raising festival. It's kind of country rock and bluegrass and stuff, and they have... There's no commercial catering on site or anything like that. It's very much a crew-based project, and it was really sublime last year. The sun shone all the way through the set-up, through the whole festival, for the whole takedown. That's after 10 years of getting peed on in Welsh festivals. That must have been the payback, eh?
Yeah, I was sat here rocking, listening to that. In fact, I was doctor rocking, and I was up and down on my chair, yeah. So, yeah, I'd like something like that. I'll have to go to something like that.
Very good, yeah. John Langan Band, well worth listening to. They're a Scottish band. I think some of them are certainly from Glasgow, but they're a Scottish band, and they play. He's got a real mean fiddle, that man. I really like a good fiddle, yeah. I do. Good fiddle and a big horn section, as the vicar said to the what's-it.
Massive joking there, isn't there?
Yeah. Anyway, so you were suggesting at the beginning of the first half of the show that you might have, that the law might not exist at all, which would be a tremendous relief, wouldn't it, really? I've been thinking about it.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a good job this is radio, because our listeners might end up throwing bloody bog roll at me and glasses and stuff. But they might think I'm off my nut here, but I know it's right. In fact, I've studied it long enough, and this really does make sense to me. So there are no laws, and there is no law. It's purely a construct of the mind. Do you want me to sort of elaborate our...
Yeah, go for it. Take it away, Mr. Freeman, sir.
Okay. I hope you don't come out as rubbish, this. Obviously, this has been a lot of years of study for myself, but I'll just give you my definition of evil, what evil is, and then you'll see where the law thing comes in. Obviously, there's good and bad, and everybody says, what's the opposite of good? It's bad. It's not, really. The opposite of good is evil, and evil and bad aren't the same thing, because good people are capable of doing bad things at certain times. And bad people are capable of doing good things. I know a chap that we didn't know at the time. It turned out years later that when he was in his 60s, we found out he'd been a paedophile for about 40 years. Obviously, we were shocked and we had nothing to do with him. But at one point, 20 years previous to that, this chap, who was a good swimmer, dived into a river and saved a child from drowning. So the point I'm trying to make is bad people can do good things every now and again, and good people can do bad things. But evil is an entirely different entity. And the conclusion I've come to is that evil, the main reason we know evil exists in a big way, and evil exists, as far as I'm concerned, to totally destroy freedom. That's it. That's what it's here for. Pure and simple. Evil exists to destroy freedom. And I'll expand on that a little bit. So if you just bear in mind, you don't have to agree with it, but just bear in mind the point I'm trying to say is that evil exists to destroy all aspects of freedom. So what I've got to realise, Doc, is that I'm looking at the law, and remember I said earlier it's interpretation of words only, that's what law is. So straight away it started to resonate that if it's interpretation of words, then how realistic is law? Where does law come from? And so the conclusion I've come to after many years studying is that there is no such thing as law. Apart from there's one law, and if we get time, I hope we do before we close up, about this people's mandate that I'm creating.
Yeah.
And I know you've read the preamble and stuff, Dob, and it's number one footing, right from the stage one, is do no harm to another living soul. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm saying is that the only law that does exist, so this is where the people's mandate comes from, is universal law. And I know you know quite a lot on this subject, but whether you want to call it universal law or law of creation or God's law if you're religious, it doesn't matter what you call it, that is the only law in existence, the laws of the universe. I'll call it universal law for now. People can call it whatever they want, but for instance, you've got the laws of gravity. If you jump off a 20-story building, the laws of gravity suggest that you're going to hit the floor unless something intervenes. And so law is, it's solid, it's consistent, it's 100%. A law is a law, and the only laws there are, are universal laws. So putting that to one side, everything else arising from that cannot be a law. And what I've realised is there are no laws. The only thing there are what's called principles, okay? Now, bear with me on this, and this will make sense. I'll just give you the definition of a principle. A principle, and this is not from a legal dictionary, this is what a principle is. It's a fundamental truth or proposition that serves as the foundation for a system of belief or behaviour, or for a chain of reasoning. I'll read that again, it's a bit long-winded. A principle is a fundamental truth or proposition that serves as the foundation for a system of belief or behaviour or for a chain of reasoning. Okay, and that's why I wanted to tell you about the people's mandate is based on principle, not law. Okay, I've made some notes here, I did on my show the other day. I'll read you what I've put together. So the only true law, the only real law is universal law or law of creation, yeah? Everything else is a principle, and a principle is developed over time. Okay, so that definition of principle, try and keep that in mind.
Yeah.
And what I've got here is a principle then, developed over time, a principle is a truth that creates freedom, same as the people's mandate. That's what a principle is, yeah?
Yeah.
A law is a lie that creates slavery. Now you think about it, the laws that we are supposedly have to abide by, especially the legislation, creates slavery. It takes away your fundamental freedoms and replaces them with privileges and benefits that are granted to you. So by its very definition, a law, no matter which type of law, it is a lie that creates slavery. Principles describe reality. Again, that definition I've just read out. Laws are artificial ideas created by evil men, get this, to restrict the freedoms of people, especially freedom of thought. So that's really what a law is. It's an artificial idea. And I know, and the early Freeman stuff, and I've done it myself, look at the laws, there's the legislation, the statutory stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
There's trust law, there's commercial law, this is why you've got all different dictionaries. Now, even common law, and this is where people say, you know, sure, you're an idiot, and I'm not. Even common law that we used to try and get in court and claim, there's no wonder they ignored us. Common law is still a construct of the mind. It's indigenous people living on a geographical landmass, an area, that had to come up with some sort of system. So really, common law is still, although it started out with good intentions, and it has still got good intentions, but even common law is a construct, and it has to be, because there's some things that you can do in Brazil that you can't do in Spain. And there's stuff you can do in England that you can't do in France. So again, it's subjective and pertains only to that geographical landmass. So even common law, or any law, by its very nature, is a construct. And this is the important bit. And again, like I said, it's laws exist. They were created by men, and I would say evil men, to restrict the freedoms, but especially freedom of thought. And that's the key to all this. And get this, laws mask themselves in authority so that they can impersonate principles. Okay.
I like that. Would you like to reread that? That's very good.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? And there's a lot of study going into this, and I've took different sources to get to this. Laws mask themselves in authority. I'm going to tell you what authority is in a minute. Laws mask themselves in authority so that they can impersonate principles. And what I mean by that, Doc, and everybody, is we are conditioned from being little tiny kids, as soon as we're born, to believe, it's a belief system, that we either abide the law, or if we choose not to, that we live outside the law, that we're outlaws. Can you see what I'm getting? We think that the law is everything, but it's not, because all it is interpretation of words. And what we know deep down inside our core, what resonates really, if we stop thinking so much and start feeling a little bit more, is that it's principles, that definition of principle that I gave you earlier, it's principles that we really should live by. And by that, Doc, is you don't need, and I don't need, anybody to tell me what's right or wrong. I know if I'm doing wrong. If I'm causing harm to a living soul, then that's a principle that I shouldn't live by. Forget the word law for the minute. If I'm not causing harm to another living soul, then the principle that I'm living to is I'm doing nothing wrong. That's why I'm saying about laws laws are constructed. I'm just going back to principles. So instead of nowhere in this mandate, and I've revamped the preamble. I'm hoping to read it out. I don't know if we'll have time.
Don't you worry. We'll make it to the preamble.
Am I nattering on too much, Doc? Just tell me the
No, no, no. Carry on, sir.
I always do that, because I always think they're getting bored. I forgot where I went now. Principles. Forget laws, because they are a construct. All we are really living by, but we don't realise, because we're getting tricked into abiding or not abiding by laws, are these principles, like us just using as an example. And there's a thing called axioms. An axiom, and it's very similar, is a statement or proposition which is regarded as being established, accepted, or self-evidently true. Now, a principle and axiom are very similar. I'll read that again. An axiom is a statement or proposition which is regarded as being established, accepted, or self-evidently true. So what I'm saying is principles and axioms develop over time and become established and accepted as the right thing to do.
There's not much difference, is there, between an axiom and a maxim, then? A maxim sounds to be pretty much the same thing.
Absolutely, absolutely, mate, yeah. And an axiom, and I'm going to be using axioms in the preamble and the people's mandate. An axiom can be a written expression of expression of our principles. That's what it is. It's a written expression of our principles. That's really what an axiom is. I'm just doing a bit of paper shuffling because I've made some notes here for this finished show of the day. I've got 2 seconds. Okay, so what is authority? There's no authority on earth that can rightfully govern your life if you don't want it to. Okay, authority, Truth Juice Dave, my great friend, and I know he's a good friend of yours, he told me that authority means author of the writ. Yeah? I would say it's author of history, actually, the rewriters of history. That's what authority is. And let's have a look at like I said, no authority on earth can rightfully govern your life, because if you're not causing harm to another living soul, why would you want your life governing anyway? And this is
either we're all equal or we're not.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is what I'm coming to with the people's mandate is the first stage to self-governance, based on principles and axioms that we know to be right. Do not cause harm to another living soul. And let's just have a quick look at this, and I'll get off this, but see how familiar this sounds. Authority always places demands on people by force. Authority always places demands on people by force, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're giving you duties and responsibilities.
Absolutely. But it never asks permission. Authority never asks permission, yeah, but dictates that we, the people, ask it for permission and seek permission to engage in just about every aspect of our life. That's what authority is. It's back to the protection racket. That's what authority is. It never seeks permission from us and uses force against us, but when we want to do something, we have to seek, beg and ask permission from it in just about every aspect of our lives, don't we?
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing?
Does this making sense, though? Yeah.
It's certainly making sense, yeah, indeed. And again, it's like a sort of gradual unveiling, really. We sort of know that these things are true, but they're just becoming clearer and clearer, aren't they?
They are, and it seems really simple to me, this. And so my conclusion of this is that authority is the epitome of evil. Authority, my door was banging then with the wind. We're taught to respect authority and do as authority tells us, and from an early age, and it's a core belief system instilled in us. And what I'm saying is authority is the epitome of evil, because every single authority exists to destroy freedoms. by its very nature, having to seek permission from it and submit applications for registration and to be licensed, it's lying to our censors, so having to have, I know, to have licenses, by its very nature, it's taken away our freedom. And the ultimate destruction of freedom, pure and simple, is when they kill you. That's the ultimate taking away of freedom, is the loss of life. They kill you. And so the stages in between before they kill you are all destructions of freedom in varying degrees, caused by the epitome of evil, which is authority. So I hope that made some sort of sense.
It certainly does. And I mean, if you want to, there's a few people out there who I mix with and stuff who think that that's a really paranoid view of the way things are. But it seems to me that if you think about 1984 and how they're disappearing words, and they're rewriting news stories, and they're disappearing people, and in the end what they rely on absolutely is fear to completely reconstruct the psyche of the hero of the book. It's very difficult not to look around and see that 1984 was really accurate. It's a really accurate description of the world that we find ourselves living in.
Absolutely. I think I've read that book about 5 times. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a bit of a prediction or a forewarning of, you know, what was going to happen, yeah.
Well, yeah, it was originally going to be called 1948, you know, but they wouldn't let him call it that. It was a description of post-war Britain. And he wanted to call it 1948, but it was in the end decided to call it 1984 to make it seem a little bit more remote.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So, what about the People's Mandate then, Rob? How's it going with that? Because basically it's in two bits, isn't it? You've got the People's Mandate itself, which presumably you're still working on, and you've got the preamble, which I gather you've got a sort of buffed up version now.
I have, yeah. Excuse me, I'm just going to cough. Yeah, first is like a bit of a mission statement. But our governor on Critical Mass Radio, Paul, he's actually set me a website up. Can I have a, do a bit of a shameless plug here, Doc? Would you mind?
Shamelessly plug away.
Okay, it's only just been set up, so it's still sort of under construction. But there's a few things on it. There's a few writings from myself and the mission statement from the People's Mandate. And the actual website is set up for me. In fact, there's a couple of videos on there where I do some talks. And it's actually called The People's Mandate. So can I give you the website for it?
Yeah, yeah. I'll type it into the chat box as you say it.
Okay, well, it's www.thepeoplesmandate, all lowercase.
Yeah.
.co.uk.
Shall I tell you one of the biggest myths they've managed to perpetrate amongst us is that everything needs to be written in lowercase for these addresses? Because I've concluded, because I've been going around doing talks and workshops and all that, I have a book that I get people to kind of put their names in if they want to be kept in touch with what we're doing. And I always say in big letters at the top, please write in capital letters so that I can read it.
All right.
And half of them always write in lowercase because they've somehow been made to believe that lowercase letters are what's needed. And, of course, you can't read them. Every time there's two or three of these addresses that I can't read. And as it happens, you could put them in a mix. It's actually true because you can try out. You can put in a total mixture of upper and lowercase letters and email addresses and stuff still work.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Nice one, mate. I didn't know that.
Isn't it? Because we all say all lowercase and stuff. But there you go. Sorry, that's just the geek in me popping his head in. Just that.
Yeah, I like stuff like that, though. I find it interesting. Yeah, it's really good. So for people that don't know yet, and it's still in its infancy, this, I'm trying to write something called The People's Mandate. In fact, it's halfway through now. And all it is, and I think we spoke about it before, but just briefly, is what I've realised is that there is no law other than universal law, and it's a construct. Also, if any group joins together in an organisation or a group or anything, an association, whatever it is, it's a body of people together, and under these constructed terrorism laws, they can be closed down. So what I'm putting together is something called the People's Mandate, which is everyday men and women on the geographical landmasses known as England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales, okay? I'm not even going to call them countries, I'm not going to call it British Isles, I'm not even going to call it the United Kingdom. Everyday men and women who've basically knows there's something wrong can add their name to the People's Mandate, and what it is, in brief, is we're going to serve what's called a preamble. I'm going to read that out if that's all right with you, Doc. A preamble, which is like an introduction to the People's Mandate. And when there are enough people on board, we're going to serve the preamble into every single department you can think of, every government department, the banking industry, individual banks, mortgage companies, corporations, everything you can think of, local councils, everyone's getting them, the military, everything you can think of is getting a preamble, and they've got 90 days, Doc. They are public servants. All corporations serve the people, no matter what. Every corporation, whatever it is, they are underneath the people. The people of England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales, everyday men and women, we are the power. We are the real currency. And all it is what I read earlier, is we've given away power of attorney because we can't be asked to manage our own affairs. So what this I know, what this preamble is going to take it back for us now, what this preamble is going to do, it's going to give every one of those that I've mentioned and more 90 days, excuse me, to do two things. One, to come up with the accounting and show what they've done with our money. I don't care about fiat currency or whatever. We are the currency and we are the value. So we want to know what's happened to those multi-billions. Every industry has now got to come up with an audit. They're going to have 90 days to do it. And even if it's only the last year's audit or the last 5 years' accounts, to show where our money has gone, okay? So first of all the figures have got to tally up and be right. They've got 90 days to do it. Never once is the word law mentioned in the preamble or the full mandate. Okay, so we serve the preamble. They've got 90 days to come up with the accounting, the audit, like we said. And they are all public servants, and they are all, whatever office they are holding, they are subservient and underneath, whatever they're working in that capacity, to us, the people. When they aren't at work and they take the uniforms and suits off, then they are part of we, the people, here again. But whenever they are working in that capacity that they've chosen, they are in a position of service, yeah, civil service or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So 90 days. Come up with the audit. Come up with the accounting. All your figures have got to match to show where this money's gone. Now that is a great feat in itself, because I can guarantee you not one corporation is going to manage to balance the books for us. But even if they do manage it, that's the first bit. The second part to it, and this is the crux to it all, is whatever profits you these companies or whoever they are, departments or whatever. Whatever profits they show, the second attachment to it is that they must prove with written evidence. They must prove with written evidence that when they made those profits, they kept intact people's fundamental freedoms and rights when they made those profits. Now, as you know and I know and everyone knows, Doc, they're never ever going to be able to do this. It's absolutely impossible for the corporate entities to make that much money, that much profit. We know it's at the expense of everyday men and women's fundamental freedoms and basic rights. Does that make sense so far, mate?
Yeah, it certainly does. And, I mean, you know, in every single way they're working to our advantage, and the money from the word go is fraudulently misappropriated. So there's absolutely no hope of them being able to do either of those things right from the word go.
Absolutely. And what's happening is after the 90 days is up, what they are is the public servants or civil servants, whatever they are, they're all, even the corporations, they're all there in the, they are servants, they're in the service industry. When they don't come up with what we want, and this can only happen, this can only fail if people don't get on board. Remember, it can't be shut down, the people's mandate. If one person feels that they've had a wrong done to them, a 20 quid parking ticket, for instance, to write up to somebody else who've had houses taken away, children taken away, whatever, even the power of the one in the group is just as important, their fundamental freedoms, as 100 or 200 or 1,000 people. We are all there together and we have the same fundamental freedoms and rights.
And every single one of us has been shafted to one extent or another.
Absolutely. There's nobody that's not. And all we're doing is,
asking for their accounting, demanding, requiring their accounting, that all everything tallies up, and that they, with written proof, written evidence, that they kept it intact while they made those profits, everyday people's fundamental freedoms and rights. Now, when they don't do it, we're going to step in now and relieve them of their duties, because they are trustees, public servants. They're in breach of trust. Again, we've given that trust away through tacit procuration, and there's nothing to stop us taking it back. And what it is, Doc, it's going to be the first step for self-determination and self-governance for us, the people. Iceland did it with the banking industry. We can do it with everything.
That's one of the most important things to recognise is, you know, once again, it's very easy to stand back and think, well, this is just a pipe dream. But Iceland have done it.
Absolutely.
Hungary are reputed to be making similar moves. Yeah. And we are the 99% after all. There's millions of us.
Absolutely. And it is a pipe dream. Doesn't everything start with that? You know, it starts with an idea, a spark and a dream, and then it becomes reality. And we can manifest this into reality, because what's the alternative? Everyone knows it's corrupt, it's wrong. And all we're doing is questioning, all we're doing is asking them to prove that, to show just cause of their actions. And they will not be able to do it. Now, if 10,000 people join this, or 5,000, that's all right. If 20,000, I want a million people's names on this. They've got nothing to lose. There's no corporate title on there. There's no address with postcodes. All there are the common names that you want to use. So, for instance, it would be Rob Freeman living on the geographical landmass known as England, or known as Sheffield, known as England. And that's it. That's all we have to do. And that's what the site's been set up for. So is it all right just to read the preamble, though?
Yeah. Before you read it out, one of the things I really like about it is, as I've been looking into the nature of consciousness, the nature of everything, it seems that, you know, the whole thing is holographic, that the essence of the impossibly large is echoed in the essence of the improbably small. And it seems to me that, you know, the original methods as individuals of dealing with this situation is to ask them to see the books, basically. You know, show me the contract, show me the accounting where it got transferred from your account to mine. And what this is doing is actually writing that large. It's basically the same thing, but asking the whole system, show us the contract, show us you're working.
Absolutely, Doc. And it's like you and I owning a company, and the staff aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. We're losing money right, left and centre, and the staff are getting, the lower staff are getting terribly. So you and I hold a meeting, and we say, when we look at what they've been doing, and they're not doing the job, so we just sack them off, don't we? And we do it ourselves. And that's all it is. It's simple, isn't it?
Yeah. Go on then. Let's hear the preamble to the people's mandate.
And this is just in draft, okay? This is just draft form, and it will be finalised in a few weeks. So this is a preamble to the people's mandate. This is an introduction that we're going to send off. A preamble is sort of prior notification. You've got 90 days to come up with what we want. So the date's to be inserted yet, 2014, and this is what it says. Take notice, every man and woman living on the geographical landmasses commonly known as England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales, irrespective of anyone holding any titles, occupation, government positions, stroke officers, positions of perceived authority, legal standing or other, this preamble is the introduction to the people's mandate and concerns every living soul on the aforementioned landmasses. Whereas the preamble affords a period of 90 days for anyone holding office, and subsequently anyone working within and under those offices, irrespective of their nature of business or other, that have been notified by this preamble and will be subsequently mandated by the people, that we the people of the aforesaid landmasses require a full audit and breakdown of all the financial accounting of every government department, office, corporation, industry or other that we believe has or may adversely affect our fundamental freedoms and basic rights / necessities. Just tell me if it sounds shite, Doc, if you can't understand anything or anything.
That sounds good to me. Full audit, I like that.
Cheers. This preamble and the subsequent following mandate are written in plain, commonly used English. No other language or translation or meaning is to be interpreted from it. It means what it says. It means what we say. So forget your legalese and all your clever speech and all your double speech. It's in plain common English that we're using. It means what we say. Government and every industry stroke commercial enterprise bar none are representative of and operate for the well-being of the people. Every government department, industry stroke commercial enterprise is therefore subservient to the people. Every government department, industry stroke commercial enterprise is answerable and accountable to the people. Whereas, if after the audits, in brackets accounting for all government departments, industry stroke commercial enterprises served by this preamble have been submitted on a public forum of the people's choice, if the people find that the checks and balances do not equate to a fair, lawful and responsible administrative reflection of our commonwealth whilst maintaining our fundamental freedoms and rights, then the people will issue the people's mandate after the 90-day period has elapsed. The people's mandate is our inalienable and God-given right to self-determination and self-governance. Any attempt to prevent the self-governance of a people is and will be deemed as an act of terrorism. A definition of terrorism, by the way, is to take away the right for self-governance. That is a definition of terrorism. Yeah, so is and will be deemed as an act of terrorism. The people will deal with the terrorists accordingly, and as we see fit, as is our inalienable right. Whereas this preamble and subsequent mandate of the people is not to be treated as a threat, nor is it of a frivolous nature, nor vexatious, nor does it promote an intention of ill will, but serves to notify government and every industry stroke corporation and their employees that this is your one and only chance, to justify an account for all your financial dealings and to show evidence, proof and just cause in all your commercial transactions that your primary objective is one of serving the people, with the people's fundamental freedoms and rights remaining intact before any corporate profits have been made. Three or four paragraphs and it's done, mate.
Absolutely. The people's man... Absolutely, sorry, great, yeah, carry on.
Thanks, mate. And it's still a draft yet, so we've got to improve it. I'm going to put the word sentient beings in here, by the way, which I've not put in yet, so it will be revamped and put out. The people's mandate is non-negotiable, full stop, that's it. It is not open for debate, deliberation and or criticism. It is the will of the people. It will carry the names of ordinary men and women. It overstands anything of a legal nature. That's my favourite line in the whole thing. It overstands anything of a legal nature. The will of the people is a universal principle, and this preamble and subsequent people's mandate are our written axioms of truth and a reflection of the inherent natural law of universal stroke God stroke creator, with the starting point being equality for all living souls. The foundation of the people's mandate, from whence everything else is built from and arises from, is the core truth: do no harm to another living soul. This fundamental principle is the first footing to be ever mindful of, and will start the people on a journey whose final destination will be one of self-determination and self-governance that is just, fair, equal and prosperous for all the people living on the aforementioned geographical landmasses. Nearly done. The people's mandate is coming. It is created, stroke granted by the people, for the people, and affords self-governance for all the people. If this preamble and requirement for the audit stroke accounting is ignored by any body, in inverted commas, that it has been served upon, then we the people will proceed to the serving of the people's mandate after the 90-day time limit has elapsed, without the giving of any further notification. This preamble is a true and honest statement of the intention of the people living on the aforementioned geographical landmasses. And then the finishing part to it is, this is where it's served. This preamble is served by the people living on the geographical landmasses commonly known as England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales, and is prior notification to the forthcoming people's mandate, and is served on this day, date to be inserted, 2014. And then the last bit I got from my very good friend, Rob B. And there's a bit at the bottom, and it says, and this is really important, in reference to the first sentence in the preamble of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights from 1948. So this is the first sentence in the preamble of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights from 1948. And the first line says, whereas recognition of the inherent dignity and of the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family is the foundation of freedom, justice and peace in the world. And that's how it will end. So I hope that makes some sort of sense, man. I didn't rab it on too much.
No, there's some pretty powerful words in there, aren't there? And like you say, there's Well, I mean, well, one of the things I think is that, yeah, it'd be really good to get a million people on there, but given that every single one of us is being shafted every single day in as many different ways as you might possibly imagine, it'd be really great to think, wouldn't it, that we got like 4 million signatures on it and you'd have as many people's signatures on there as you've got behind this dodgy coalition that's presuming authority at the moment.
Well, to be honest, I can't see why anybody wouldn't put the name on. It's your common name. There's no addresses. You don't sign anything. No money changes hands. And the great thing about this is you haven't got to even be an awakened soul. Because if I stand in the street and say to people, are you happy or how everything's going off? Well, I can't afford my council tax. I can't afford my electricity bill. I've got the breakdowns of how much these corporate entities make in profit. So anybody who's not even awake yet or aware, Stick whatever name you want on this, if you live in Leicester or Birmingham or Dublin or Glasgow, wherever you live, stick your common name on, your geographical landmass. Would you like a chance to have your say in how things are running in the future? Now, who in the right mind is going to say no? Everybody's going to join it, aren't they?
They certainly are. And the thing is that more and more people are being more blatantly disadvantaged by the system. Your very eloquent piece on the fact that the law doesn't exist is actually becoming really clear now, I think, to many people. And as each individual becomes aware of that, they're more likely to want to put their name to such a thing. And in a way, it's just the fact that the law doesn't exist seems like a bizarre idea. But I mean, you know, there was a point when I was like standing in the co-op and stuff and realising that I was just handing over these promises to pay and that effectively I'm getting everything free from the co-op and that the money doesn't exist. It's the same idea, isn't it?
Well, I've forgotten the most important bit and you've just done it. Absolutely brilliant. And this is the pulling point where people are going to love it, and it is the right thing to do when it's honourable. That preamble and the mandate are honourable. And after the 90-day period, when we take over, it's not, people say, oh, Rob, it's a great solution. No, it's not a solution. It's the very first step for us as a species to undergo a journey of self-determination and realise about self-governance. And from that point on, when our public servants and all these people step down, and this is the pulling point, all debt will be forgiven from that point. It has to, Doc, because these people who are losing their houses, try and hang on, because this can be done, this. Bailiffs kicking your door in, try and survive with the solutions that lots of people and myself have given out. That's a quick fix. That's sticking a sticking plaster over a big wound. It'll temporarily stop the bleeding, but we're sick of having remedies. What it is, you have remedies for when you get ill. We want to go to a cure now, and it's an opportunity to cure. And what I'm saying is all debt will be forgiven from that moment on, because no longer will we be using a debt-based fiat currency. As we know, constructed by private bankers. When we do take over and allocate people, it's going to take time, it's going to take 20 years at least to have it all running smoothly. But the point is, we can establish a method of credit or an item of credit called currency, whatever we want to, we can use the same paper. But the point is, it's going to be an item of credit, and we're going to start debt forgiven, all debts forgiven. We start off from where we are. If you're in your house, you can't afford to pay 600 quid a month for your mortgage. If you only pay 50 quid a month of not debt-based stuff, but credit, your credit will build up over time. If you only pay 50 quid a month, then you're performing the maximum you can on that arrangement or agreement or contract. It's the official offer. You pay 50 quid a month until you're in a better position. And if you can raise it up, and it's all about honour, then you raise it up to 70 quid a month. And this is what I'm saying is all debt will be forgiven, Doug. I'm conscious of the time.
The thing is, we know, don't we, that the production of currency without interest by a treasury works really well at strengthening individual resolve and as well your the community economy. We know that there is a solution to the lie that is money, and we know that it's effective because they've shot several people for trying to introduce it.
Absolutely, absolutely, mate. And what I was going to say is, because it's going to be a credit-based currency, then we will eventually be building our credit up. We'll become credit worthy, and it can't fail. The only reason it can fail is if not enough people get on it.
Yeah,
don't get on board.
Well, I think that's a really good way to to wrap up this latest conversation. It's been, as ever, a real education. Thanks, Rob. You've done us proud over the last few weeks. Thanks so much for coming on. I think everybody's enjoyed it. I certainly have.
Oh, thanks, Doc. Thanks for inviting me back 3 times now. And I just want to say thanks to all our listeners, but especially people in the chat room. I'll read the back posts. I'll read them back later on. But, yeah, thanks to everybody for giving me the chance to speak to a wider audience. And one more shameless plug, Doc, before we wrap up. If anyone does want to get in touch with me, what's my email address, Doc? Can you remember it?
It's robfreeman@criticalmassradio.co.uk.
Oh, thanks, mate. I've forgotten my own email.
That's what it is, and his show's called Into the Light, and it's well worth a listen, and, you know, like all the rest of it, if we don't have time to catch up with it live, which we don't, there's the podcast there, and lots of interesting stuff.
So, okay, thanks. Thanks a lot, Doc, for inviting me on. I've really enjoyed it, and we'll have to speak privately off air, and I'll thank you then. Cheers.
Yeah, that'd be great. And you know, we'll give them a few weeks off, and then we'll come back on with some of the other subjects we've still got to talk about. But I think there's been a whole load of really useful stuff. So I'm going to.